Today we talk about many witches' favorite topic, fairies. We'll cover lore, history, types, and ways to start incorporating their unique energy into your practice. Despite being a longer episode, we've only just scratched the surface, so we'd love to know how your cultures and traditions view the Fae. You can jump into the Discord or Patreon channels to chat. And speaking of Patreon, this show wouldn't be possible without the support of our producer-level patrons, Erin, Samantha, and William. You guys rock! If you'd like to join the VIP coven and get access to bonus episode clips, monthly readings, and more, check us out on Patreon. But now, let's get into the episode.
Welcome to 2x Torchlight, where we dive deep and get real about magic and witchcraft, its relationship to science and pop culture, and what it's really like to build a modern practice that's accessible, effective, and unique to you. I'm Aradia, your veteran witch.
And I'm Liz, a newer practitioner. Hang out with us round the torchlight as we talk all things woo and witchcraft.
Hi, Aradia.
Hey, Liz.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. My kiddo comes home in 2 days from her extended vacation to family in North Carolina, so I'm very excited.
Has it been quiet?
Yes. Yes, it's been quiet, but I don't like it, so. Yeah, I'm just ready for her to come home. I'm not ready for her to start cheerleading on Monday, though, because that's going to literally take up all of my free time.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember my sister did cheerleading when she was a kid. Actually, I can't even say when she was a kid because she kept with it almost through college. So, yeah, I am aware of the world that you are entering, and it is a scary place. So,
yes. Yeah.
Have fun with that.
Yeah, luckily she has three other parents to help take some of the burden off.
Yeah.
Of me, so I don't have to, because I am not a cheerleader. I am not in any way, shape, or form destined for that life.
But yeah, what are we talking about today, Aradia?
Well, sort of in honor of the witchlet, and I had to cover this topic when she wasn't in the house because she would come running when she hears me start to talk about this, but we are going to cover a little bit of fairy lore today and how the fae have a place within witchcraft and magic and general spirituality.
I'm so excited to talk about this. So yeah. Excited.
The Fae are cool. The Fae, so one of the very first books that I ever got when I got into witchcraft was a book I'm going to talk about later called A Witch's Guide to Fairy Folk. And I loved the idea of, I've always believed in fairies, and I still believe in fairies, and my kiddo believes in fairies. So we do stuff like we leave gifts out for the fairies outside, and we say hello and goodbye to the spirit of our home when we leave and when we come back. I tell her, you know, Let's not invite them home with us, which we'll get to again also later. But we just sort of just like understanding that fairies are real and that they're all around us is just sort of like a way of life for us.
Absolutely. I've been talking to the fairies ever since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Super obsessed with them. I was somebody who used to like have a mushroom circle in her backyard when she was a kid and like used to grow sunflowers for the fairies. And was just like always outside looking for them. So yeah, for sure.
Nice.
But Aradia, aren't you not supposed to work with the Fae?
Oh, no. See, okay. We're getting into it now. All right. Strap in. So you can absolutely work with the Fae. Fae aren't what a lot of people nowadays seem to attribute them to be, but they're not dangerous if you're careful. I wouldn't go messing around with any mushroom circles in my backyard, but they're not scary. Well, they are scary. They shouldn't be scary if you're handling them correctly. I am just not making any sense right now. Okay, why don't we break it down? We'll start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start.
Okay.
How would you describe a fairy? What is a fairy to you? How would you define it?
So it's a word for a grouping of otherworldly, like not human, like not of this world type creatures and like places and phenomenon. It's just kind of that umbrella of all things. Yeah, otherworldly, like that things that like don't quite make sense, aren't quite the same or the way that you would kind of expect the world to be. I don't like using the word supernatural because to me, supernatural has like a completely different connotation, because I say supernatural and you think like aliens or like
TV show?
Like that. Right, exactly. This is more of that, like, I almost want to say Uncanny Valley.
Okay.
A little bit. That off-kilter feeling.
Yeah. No, I can see that. So when we're talking about, like, what fae are, I always think about, like, cryptids and cryptid lore, right? Like, there's a lot of overlap between cryptid as a category and fairy as a category, but they're not quite the same thing. But yeah, they're otherworldly beings. They're very magical. And leading into one of my biggest pet peeves, a lot of people consider nature spirits to be fairies, like to be synonymous with fairy, right? So you go on TikTok or like you pick up a book or whatever, and like the big thing is, oh, fairies are spirits of the land and they're tied to nature. And if you're kind to nature, then fairies will like you, right? And this is one of my biggest pet peeves because nature spirits are something different. Nature spirits can be considered a type of fae, for sure. But not all fairies are like elemental, and not all fairies are tied to the land, and not all fairies can be appeased just by like picking up trash at your local park. And I think it's kind of dangerous to conflate the two.
Yeah. And like that is it's a very Gaelic way. It's a very Celtic way of thinking. And there's more to fairies than that one way of thinking.
I would even specify it's a modern Celtic way of thinking because they were originally just like creatures that were not entirely human and they lived underground, which might be where some of that like connection to nature comes into play. But like that idea is very like modern Celtic witchy Wicca kind of practice. Nature spirits are elemental spirits, right? And they are entities that are tied to the land, whether it's a local region or a greater geographical area. But fairies are more typically categorized by their behavior and their physical appearance than what they do and where they live. Because you can have some fairies, like I said, that are very nature-oriented, but then you have others that have nothing to do with living in the woods, and that's what they're down for. It's kind of like that umbrella terminology, like not all witches are Wiccan, but all Wiccans are witches. Right? Or not all Christians are Catholic, but all Catholics are Christian. It's kind of like that, where fairy is more of like an umbrella category and nature, elemental spirits and entities fall under that umbrella category. And I see people mixing that up a lot nowadays on the internet. And it's such a big pet peeve of mine. Like I was doing a Witch Talk React video for YouTube a couple mm-hmm. weeks ago. And there was a Witch Talk video that was like, oh, this is how you work with the fae. I don't know if you could hear my phone in the background or not. This is how you work with the fae. You know, they live in like holes in trees. And if you're disrespectful to nature, then they will... they won't want to work with you, but they're not scary and they're not dangerous. And I'm like, no, none of that is fairy. that is all something completely, it's a type of fairy for sure, but it's not all fairies. And like I said, I think it's dangerous to think that. So not all fairies are benevolent nature spirits. Some aren't even connected to nature, but fairies are these sort of ethereal figures that honestly exist all over the world. And they exist all over the world in not necessarily traditional ways like we would think of fairies. Like the image that we have of a fairy is very Celtic British Isles. But there are some weird ass fucking creatures out there that would be considered fairies for their culture that definitely don't look like little pixies with wings.
Oh yeah, for sure. Even most of the Celtic and British Isle fairies don't actually look like that or act like that. Like originally they were supposed to be like, not all of them were supposed to be like really scary or ugly or things like that, but a lot of them traditionally were described that way. So they're not, like you said, little pixies with the thin wings and the pretty faces. Like, no.
Well, a pixie is a type of fairy, and it's typically smaller, and it typically has wings, and it can be mistaken as a bug, but it's just one type of fairy, right?
Right, exactly.
Before we get into the type of fairies and stuff, I want to talk a minute about the differences in spelling and, like, etymology and everything.
Because I know you're super into that.
So there's like, a million different words for this type of creature and a bunch of different spellings for it. So typically the most accepted modern version is F-A-I-R-Y. That is usually referring to more like fantasy. Like if you were to pick up a book about fairies in like a fantasy fiction type book, it would be traditionally F-A-I-R-Y, although some modern fairy writers have been switching to other forms of the word just to, I don't know, seem edgy or something. I don't know. But fairy spelled F-A-E-R-I-E would typically denote more of like a folklorist or a mythological perspective, more like cultural, historical creatures that cultures and groups of people would consider fairies. And then you have like fae, F-A-E, and then fae, F-E-Y, and then fae, F-A-Y, and then fairy, F-A-E-R-Y, all different spellings to mean the same thing. And then you get into like the nicknames, right? Because in some cultures, it's bad luck to say the word fairy. Mm-hmm. So you would say like the fair folk or the wee ones or stuff like that. So everybody knows what you're talking about, but you're not saying fairy, because in some cultures, like just saying the word fairy is an invitation to a local fairy to like come in and start messing with you.
Right, exactly. So it was very much that like wink, wink, you know what I'm talking about, but like don't actually say it.
Right, exactly. So a lot of traditional perspective when it comes to fairy lore and fairy imagery can be attributed to Celtic lore, like the British Isles, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, that whole area. But I think it's really interesting that when you start getting into like folklore and anthropological studies, there are examples of fae creatures all over the world. So like elves are a type of fae. And I know a lot of times in like modern pop culture, and especially like in the gaming world with D&D and stuff like that, elves are considered different than fairies, but elves are actually a type of fairy. And so are like goblins and dwarves and gnomes and all of that stuff. So early Germanic lore they focused a lot on elves, and they would specifically have light elves and dark elves. And that's not the same kind of dark elf as what we get out of like modern fantasy and D&D books and stuff like that. And that's believed to be the origin of the fairy lore regarding the Seelie and Unseelie courts, the light fae and the dark fae, mm-hmm. which I think is interesting because I always thought growing up that Seelie and Unseelie were the same thing as like the traditional Celtic, but it didn't actually originate there. It's more like Germanic, like European mainland kind of lore. But then you also have the Greek nymphs and satyrs from Greek mythology are fairies, and those are more of the fairies that are like traditionally tied to nature, like forest nymphs and river nymphs and that kind of categorization. But those are fairies. Banshees are fairies, although a lot of people will mistakenly refer to them as spirits, but they're not. They're a type of fairy. And even in a lot of cultures, the incubus or the succubus is a type of fairy. It's a type of otherworldly creature. Because in a lot of cultures, the category of demon would actually fall under the category of fairy, like that umbrella category, which I think is really interesting because in Christian lore, demons are a very specific thing. They're fallen angels, right? And angels are a very specific thing. But in a lot of other cultures and a lot of other religions, demons and angels are just types of fairies. And demons aren't even really considered evil in a lot of different cultures. Like you have it pronounced as like daemon or other sort of variations on the word, where they're more neutral creatures that would fall under that fairy categorization.
Even like if you look at the way like Irish Catholics handle like angels and like patron saints and stuff like that, it all still feels very, very fae.
Yeah, because when Christianity comes in, they're like, hey, what do you believe? That's, oh, you guys have like fairies and stuff? Yeah, that's really cool. We got something just like that. Did you know? Yeah, it's like right. It's like the same thing. Isn't that so weird? You should believe what we believe because it's the same thing.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, but even, yeah, to this day, a lot of the, like, and I don't know many now, mostly because, like, I knew them from school and stuff like that, but a lot of Irish Catholics still have that same type of superstition and treatment of these different beings.
But, like, it's not even just, like, European-based, right? Because we have the Greek and the Roman influence, and then, like, the Scandinavian influence in the British Isles and all of that stuff. You find examples of fae-type creatures literally all over the world. So a short, absolutely not comprehensive list that I pulled right off of Wikipedia. So you have West Africa have the Yumbos, which I thought was interesting because their alternative name, which I did not write down because I knew I would butcher it, but the alternative name for the Yumbos, which was a race of like fairy type creatures, translated to good people, which I thought was super interesting because in the British Isles, you have the fair folk and you have the Scottish term good neighbors. So like they have these very specific pseudonyms or like other names or even like code names for fairy creatures that are constructed in a very particular way, like good, fair, like positive. Yeah, yeah,
very like, carefully we, positive.
We very we like you, we honor you, we under you are good people and you are welcome here at any time and please don't fucking eat us and steal our children in the night. Like yeah, like it's right. But I thought it was really interesting that like you see that in a lot of traditional Celtic fairy lore, right? But people in West Africa were doing that too. So like it's just this idea of you treat them a very specific way so that you're on their good side is just universal, which I thought was really cool. So Japanese kitsune have a lot of overlaps with traditional fairy lore. And then China has the Mogwai, which was actually the creature, the Mogwai was the inspiration for the movie Gremlins. So Spain and also like Latin American countries have the Duende, which are creatures similar to leprechauns. Fun fact, they're considered gnome-like creatures that live in the walls of a home. And I was absolutely horrified when I read this. So they live in the walls of the home, specifically like in children's bedrooms. And they clip the toenails of unruly children while they sleep.
Oh, no, please. No,
thank you. Which sometimes will often lead to accidentally removing the entire toe. Right?
Nope.
Isn't that terrifying?
Nope.
And like, it's not even like, oh, they're stealing children and like doing something terrible, like ripping off their toenails, which I cannot handle the imagery of that. They're just like, oh, we'll clip your kid's toenails because he was being a brat today and wouldn't let you do it. And oops, we slipped. So moving on, there's the Fufule, which are Cajun lights, very similar to will-o'-wisps that live in the bayou.
And sound like a Pokemon.
Kentucky goblins would be considered a type of fae. There's, again, whole separate episode, but they're the little green men of Kentucky. They're Kentucky goblins. Some people think they're aliens. Some people think they're fae. But they inspired the Pokemon Sableye.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Wait, Sableye's purple, though.
Sableye is purple, but the way Sableye, like, moves and floats and everything is the way that people describe the Kentucky goblins, the way that they move and float.
Interesting.
I was just listening to a podcast episode about them yesterday. I was in the kitchen, and all of a sudden I started, like, screaming about Kentucky goblins in a really excited way, and my partner poked his head, and he's like, are you okay?
He should be used to it by now, first of all.
You would think he would be used to it by now, yeah. Okay, moving on. And then the last one I have on my list are the Menahune, which are Hawaiian myth about small, mischievous little dwarves that were magical creatures and expert craftsmen.
No.
Yeah. And that, like I said, is just a small selection of what I pulled from the resources that I was reading of lists of beings and creatures that fall under the fairy umbrella category. Because they're everywhere. There's like Native Americans and indigenous people have examples, and Africa and Australia, probably every single fairy in Australia will kill you because it's Australia. But there's so many all over the place, and they're all just types of fae, and they're all different than what we would traditionally think of when we look at a picture of a fairy, mm-hmm. right? Like some of my, I'm one of those people that's like, actually, when people don't lump like elves and dwarves and goblins and stuff in with the fae, I'm terrible to play D&D with.
I feel like that. This is just speculation on my part, but like, I feel like a huge contributing factor to that is J.R.R. Tolkien.
Oh yeah.
And like the Lord of the Rings, like that kind of separate in like pop culture kind of separated those specific beings away from the fae into like their own thing and into like fantasy instead of fae.
Yeah, definitely. Because when you look at like Tolkien is attributed with the modern interpretation of an elf and a dwarf nowadays, mm-hmm. right? And an orc and everything. Because before he came around and wrote those books, they were all types of fae. And even like orcs didn't look the way they do now in a lot of pop culture. Elves have always kind of looked the way elves are described, except maybe a little bit less like ethereal, but they've always been, you know, tall and thin and beautiful. Dwarves have always been shorter, you know, related to like the earth and stuff like that. But like, interestingly, most fae are related to the earth in some way, because a lot of cultures believe that the fae live underground. Yeah, Tolkien kind of, he put his own spin on it and it became like the norm. And that's why I think it's really important when we're looking for resources about working with the fae from a magical or witchy perspective, is to get really clear on how to separate folklore and mythology from modern fantasy, because they have branched out and are very far apart. There are some like pop culture fantasy writers that I think are trying to like bring the two a little bit back closer together.
Yeah, I was going to mention that towards the end of the episode, but there are definitely some books I've read in the last couple of years that really seem to want to get back to more traditional like folklore. There was one I read recently, actually, that very specifically was about, and again, it was very Irish, but did a really good, like, they did the research, and it was like a trashy romance novel, but like, whatever. Not trashy. It wasn't, but yeah. Like, it was a Kindle Unlimited romance book, you know what I mean? But like, it was, the want is there, and like, the effort is there from authors, even somebody as big as like Sarah J. Maas.
Yeah, there's definitely this movement to sort of like, get it back to more of a like, folklore perspective of what the fae are. And pull away a bit from like the Disney Tolkien sort of perspective. But it's important to remember that those fantasy fiction books are still fiction.
Oh, yeah.
They are written and designed to be entertaining and not necessarily to be mythologically accurate. So we mentioned earlier the Seelie and the Unseelie groups of Fae from Germanic origin, but there are some other famous groups of Fae that people may have heard of. These are very specific to Celtic practice, which a lot of, if you're getting into working with fairies from a witchcraft perspective, most of the resources that you're going to find to start working with the Fae are very Celtic in origin, because while cultures all around the world have examples of Fae, they don't all work with them in the same way that like a Celtic witchcraft practice would.
Yeah. And it also, so from certain research that I've done and from certain practitioners that I've spoken to, it seems to be a big part of like druidic craft and practice, yeah, as well.
So we're gonna talk about fairy Wicca in a little bit, but fairy Wicca is a type of Celtic paganism, and druidry is another type of Celtic paganism. So they both are sort of like cousins under the same umbrella, under the same pagan umbrella. But so in Welsh folklore, we have the Tylwyth Teg, which breaks down fairies into five different groups, five different general classifications. I'm going to butcher these words. I'm letting you guys know now. I don't speak Welsh. But there are the elves, which are known as the Elyon. There are household spirits, similar to brownies and hobgoblins, which are known as the Waka. No, I'm not even going to try and pronounce the Welsh because I'm going to butcher it so badly. We'll put it in the show notes. But so there are five groups. There are elves. There are household spirits. There are spirits of the mines. There are lake maidens, and there are mountain spirits. And so the Tylwyth Teg are broken up into these five different categories of fae. And within those categories, you may have fae that are mischievous. You may have fae that like humanity. You may have fae that just want to like steal kids and drown maidens and stuff like that. Because fairies are much like people in the sense that you have good examples and you have bad examples, and for the most part a lot of it is mixed. But the Tylwyth Teg are really popular in fairy lore and mythology, so there's a lot that's sort of known and written about them. And the other really big popular group of fae are the Shi, which is spelled S-I-D-H-E, not S-H-E-E, but it's pronounced Shi, which the Shi has even become synonymous with the term fairy. But the Shi is just a specific type of fairy. Irish myth states that the Tuatha De Danann were ancient Irish deities and other supernatural beings who came to Ireland and wanted to live here and fought other groups for control of the area, like the Fomorians, and eventually lost against... I didn't write down the name of the group. Another group of ethereal beings from like Spain, Portugal type area. But they eventually lost control of Ireland and were forced underground. Hence the, you know, many Celtic fairies are described as living underground in caves and cairns and barrows. So the Tuatha De Danann were forced underground and eventually became the Shi.
I have also heard that pronounced seed, and there is actually a difference between the seed and the Tuatha De Danann. The Tuatha De Danann were considered the greater fae folk, your courts and the more powerful, the ruling class type of thing. And then the seed themselves are kind of like the brownies and your selkies and your kelpies and like more of that.
I wonder if that's a cultural thing, because I know Irish folklore specifically said that over time, the Tuatha De Danann, who were originally like powerful beings and deities and stuff, became the Shi.
Okay. That may also be, this is where I still have a lot of research to do, because that also may be just something that has been more of a modern take.
Could be.
That I'm just kind of conflating.
Because we did talk earlier about how folklore is designed to evolve with the people, right?
Right. And same with like, now you see, again, going back to like your Sarah J. Masses and stuff, you see instead of like the ideas of Seelie Court and Unseelie Court, you get like, so in the A Court of Thorns and Roses series, it's the different courts in regards to the seasons. And then you have like your solar courts, like day, night, autumn, you know, dawn, dusk, all of that fun stuff. So yeah, it definitely evolves over time. And I think that might be something that I'm just confusing with modern fairy.
I've seen a lot of those ideas of like fairy courts based off of the seasons and fairy courts based off of the time of day. And that's definitely more of like a based in fiction and fantasy than based in folklore.
That I definitely know it is. I thought, so that I know is, but the idea of like the Tuatha De Danann and the seed being separate in another way, I thought that had more historical basis, but now I'm questioning myself.
We will put our resources in the show notes. If anybody has any others, let us know. But speaking of resources, if people wanted to learn more about either just straight like mythology surrounding the fae or how to like start working with the fae, like I mentioned earlier, one of my first books, witchcraft books I ever had, was A Witch's Guide to Fairy Folk by Edaine McCoy. And I love that book. And I know I still have it somewhere. I looked for it before doing notes for this episode and I cannot find it, but I know I still have it somewhere. I adore this book. It is the only book on fairy lore that I've ever owned, aside from like straight historical folklore, like context kind of thing. It's the only witchcraft book about fairies I've ever owned. And I adore it because what McCoy does is he pulls a lot of folklore from around the world into describing what the fae are, how to work with them, how to recognize them. And the second half of the book is basically a dictionary of different types of fae. And again, he covers things like banshees and goblins, and he even lumps angels in there and like brings a lot of the folklore into it. And then is like, okay, so here's what the fae are. Here's, you know, what they're not. Here's where they're found. And then here's how you can work with them. It's like a decent sized book. And I adore this book, and apparently it has like a new edition, so it's been updated, because the copy that I have is probably 25 years old. I can't recommend any other fairy books, because that's the only one I've ever read, and I read that one and I was done. I didn't need to read anymore. Do you have any books on like witchcraft and fae lore?
The only actual like book that I've been using to try and learn more about it beyond just like fantasy and fiction is, there it is, let me grab it. So it is I'm not going to lie. It is the Barnes & Noble's edition for A Treasury of Irish Fairy and Folk Tales. I've been perusing through it and checking like which tales they tell and stuff like that. And it does look like they've taken a lot of the traditional tales and put them in here. But I will report back once I've read more of it to let you know.
Okay.
But that's the only one that I have so far.
I mean, if people are interested in working with the Fae, just like I suggest when it comes to deity work, look into the culture's folklore. Look into the culture's mythology, because that's going to be your best resource for learning about the way people actually viewed these entities, for lack of a better word. Because you have a lot of people misconstruing things nowadays. It's always best to go straight to the source, right? It's always best to go, okay, I like the idea of working with fairies from Celtic lore, and the traditional like elves and goblins and pixies and leprechauns and that kind of stuff. The best place to learn about them is to start with Irish mythology, Scottish mythology, Welsh mythology, and learn about what these things actually were to the people who actually lived there. And then start adding on more modern day interpretations, because things do, like I said, develop over time and they change and they shift and beliefs and perspectives shift. But always, always go to the folklore first, please.
Quite literally, I'm the best example. Like my confusion from earlier is a great example for how you can get confused between the modern retellings and what historically was what people believed.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I think there's definitely room and value for modern retellings and like reimaginings and interpretations. Like I'm the biggest fan when it comes to, so Greek mythology is my jam, right? And I'm the biggest fan of modern reimaginings of old Greek myth, because myth and folklore and story is just way to like teach people lessons and impart messages. And, you know, whether or not you believe that like fairies are real, the idea of, hey, don't go wandering off into the woods because the fairies might kidnap you, is just smart advice to kids so that they don't get lost in the woods. Mm-hmm. You know, so the idea that these stories are going to evolve with the times as we need different messages means that like there is room for some of these interpretations, but I think the foundation should always be in the folklore and the mythology.
Absolutely.
So my last suggestion for resources, if this is something that you want to get more into and you want to learn more, is actually looking into the fairy branch of Wicca. So I'm not Wiccan by any stretch of the imagination, but there is a tradition of Wicca that is all about fairy work. So it falls under the Celtic umbrella tradition, and it's all about using their witchcraft, working with the Fae and the ancient Celtic pantheon. I don't know anything about it beyond that, but I know that it has a lot of overlap with like green witchcraft and like nature practice and that kind of stuff. And it really focuses on the Fae and like fairy energy and that kind of thing. But that could be an interesting place to start if you are considering really basing a practice around the belief of working with the Fae.
So, something that comes up when you're talking about the Fae or fairies or any of this type of creature, craft, folklore, like one of the first things you think of is superstitions.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so half of my practice is based around superstition. Honestly, I am the biggest superstitious skeptic you will ever meet in your entire life.
What shoulder does salt go over if you spill it?
Your left.
Thank you.
Obviously.
I've seen some people say right and I'm like, you're wrong.
No. Why would it go over your right shoulder?
No.
Obviously, it goes over your left shoulder. Although, right? Although, if we're going to break down where superstitions come from, like it goes over your left shoulder. Logistically, it's easier for a right-handed person to throw it over their left shoulder. So it's kind of like an unconscious dig against left-handed people. But it
well, in the past, left-handed people were like possessed by the devil, didn't you know?
Yeah, they're evil. Left-handed people are demons.
I was about to say, though, the only time I've ever seen people say the other shoulder is when they were left-handed.
Yeah. No,
it's, anyways.
And our
Fae superstitions.
Yes. So a lot, it seems to me that a lot of what goes into bringing Fae work into your witchcraft all comes down to managing superstitions and like working with them and around them to just sort of like bring in the energy. So mm-hmm. one common superstition that actually isn't on this list and I thought of afterwards is that like fae are often considered tricksters, right? Whether they're benevolent fae or malevolent fae, like they're very tricky. And I was always raised, one, I was raised with the belief, like before I even got into witchcraft. And then when I started practicing witchcraft, it became like a core tenet of my practice that like the fae are usually all around. There is always some kind of fairy type creature that maybe doesn't live in your home, although I do believe that all homes have some kind of spirit. We call it casita in our house for any of you who have kids or like Disney movies, but you don't speak ill of them. Like we were talking about earlier how like the sort of like the code words for talking about the fae would be like the fair folk or the good neighbors. Because you don't want to speak ill of them. And if you do, or you start to neglect them, then like things start to go missing because they'll be like, hey, you're going to fucking pay attention to me. And so like things that you need will disappear. And I've always like, if I lose something or misplace something, the first thing I do will be to like put out a piece of candy or even like light a candle or light some sweet incense and be like, Faye, I'm sorry I was being rude and ignoring you, and you are wonderful and lovely, and can you please bring my ring back? So, and it usually always reappears within a couple days. Now, is it because I kept looking for it, and obviously when you find it, you stop? Or is it like the energy bringing it back to me? You know, who knows? It's whatever, but it works. But there's that idea that they will make their presence known if they want you to know they're there.
Well, and there's also that idea of they're very quick to anger and insult. And when they are, they hold grudges forever.
Yes. And it's very hard to get back into the good graces of a fae once you have severely wronged them.
Mm-hmm. Not even severely half the time.
That I think is more culturally dependent, yeah. Because there is also the belief, it's not so much superstition as like sort of like a core belief of believing in fae, is that the fae that belong to a culture, so for example like the Shi of Ireland, are very protective of the Irish people. So the fae within a culture are very protective of that culture's people. And so they're going to be more easy to anger with people outside of that culture because you're not family. But they typically, if you are a member of that culture, you can get away with a little bit more because, oh, you're family. So we mentioned earlier the circles of mushrooms are known as fairy rings. Sometimes you can find them as like perfect circles of like flowers, specifically like dandelions or other flowers that fae really like. But these are fairy rings, and fairy rings are going to be not perfect circles because there's no such thing as a perfect circle in the real world, but pretty easily identifiable circles within the forest or your backyard, the grass or whatever. And you should never disrupt them. And you should never walk through one. And if you do happen to walk through one, do not stay inside of one. Because a lot of people consider fairy rings gateways to the realm of the fae. And so if you spend any amount of time within a fairy ring, or even, gods forbid, like take a nap in one, you will be whisked away to the fae and you will probably be never seen again. And if you disrupt a fairy ring, like if you mow down the mushrooms or you pick the flowers, then you have just invited some righteous shit down on your head.
One of my favorite more recent pictures that I've seen online recently was a kid's playset, like a plastic kid's playset, with the slide ending in a perfect fairy circle of mushrooms. And somebody posted underneath it, like, this is why playgrounds used to be made out of metal.
Yeah, no, slides were metal for a number of reasons. This was a real playground?
It was, so like, you know those like backyard sets that you can buy?
Yeah.
It was one of those.
So I have questions. So the fairy ring came with the playset, or they just positioned it perfectly so there was a fairy ring?
I don't know if they positioned it or if it grew after it was already placed.
That's a trap. that's a trap and don't go down that goddamn slide. Oh my God. Right.
But the, but that also brings up the next superstition of fairies and fae not liking, specifically iron is what you usually see.
Yes.
But metal or like man-made alloys or like stuff like that. And again, I know that's more getting into the fiction, but I have to find this picture and send it to you.
So it's actually traditional folklore. Like it's not, that's not something that's like made up for fiction. Like traditional folklore, these cultures believed, specifically in the British Isles, they believed that fairies were repelled by cold iron, specifically cold iron.
Okay.
And there's a reason for it, and I cannot for the life of me remember what it was. I think it had something to do with the content or the method of preparation. I don't...
Something wants me to say that it's because it was something that was shaped by humans, but I don't know if that's more fiction than folklore.
No, I don't think
it has... Because I've seen other things specifically use, like, steel because it was shaped by, like, humans. But, like, iron, yeah, I don't remember.
So I don't think it's that unless that was something that was created for, like, modern fiction or something. Because yeah. Steel is an iron alloy, so it still has iron right. in it. Okay. I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that it was molded by man so much as, like... Oh, I wish I could find it. This is going to bother me. I might go find it afterwards and just like insert it here. Insert reason for why the Fae don't like iron here.
Hey guys, Aridia here, popping in to give you the reason why Fae don't like cold iron, just like I promised I would. So the short answer is we don't know. It's just sort of a superstition that has lasted through the ages. But we can narrow it down to two potential reasons. The first is in the early days of Catholicism in the British Isles, churches used a lot of iron to protect against thieves and those dirty, dirty pagans. And so it had the belief that it kept pagan creatures, people, fairies, away from the one true God. The second one is one that I really like. When Romans first started to invade the British Isles and came across these people, the Britons, they didn't really know what they were up against. They would historically paint themselves and sort of like blend in with the scenery, and it almost looked like they could disappear and reappear through the fog and out of water. And they were wielding bronze weapons, which didn't really stand a chance against the Roman iron weapons. Therefore, the iron tended to defeat the Britons and their bronze weapons time after time after time, leading to the belief that the fairy folk were repelled by their iron. Another reason that we like cold iron over other forms of iron alloy like steel is because cold iron is considered more pure. It has less additions in it, and it's more of the straight metal that we get from the earth. Other than that, we don't really have a definitive answer. It's just something that people always attributed to fairy folklore, and they really liked it, and it stuck. Okay, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the episode.
But yes, that they are absolutely repelled by cold iron, which is why like old cribs were made out of iron, the like wrought iron fences, wrought iron cribs. Like it was literally to protect your children so that fairies wouldn't come in and swap them with changelings. Changeling lore, by the way, would have to be a completely separate episode because
I'm shocked my parents didn't think I was a changeling because I was a terror.
I'm still not convinced my kid is not a changeling. So I'm just going with it and we'll see what happens. So other fairy superstitions. Fairies love shiny things, so if you ever need to appease a fairy, offer them a shiny trinket as a gift with no strings attached, because you never want to say thank you to a fairy. Did you know that?
I did, yes.
You should always be polite and very respectful when dealing with the Fae. But don't ever outright say thank you if they offer you anything, because they consider this to mean that they have done you a favor and now you are in their debt. Mm-hmm. And that is dangerous. The belief that you shouldn't eat or drink food when you're in the land of the fairy ties that to the fact that they have given you food and now you are in their debt.
Right.
That's one origin for the belief that you shouldn't eat while you're there. But I think it's interesting because there's a lot of overlap in like underworld lore too. And fairies were always considered to be creatures that lived underground, right? And so this underworld lore of like the perfect example is Persephone. She eats the pomegranate seeds and gets stuck in the underworld for 6 months out of the year. Eating food when you are in these other worlds ties you to those worlds. And you see that in like a lot of different types of folklore and mythology, which I've always thought is really interesting.
Right.
So more superstitions. Never invite a fairy into your home because they will feel that they have dominion over that home. Essentially, now when you invite them in, they're like, oh, cool. Now I'm never leaving. You're welcome. And they, whatever they do, they can wreak havoc. They can, sometimes they can help, sometimes they can hinder. And there are certain types of fae that have been considered like fae of the home. Like brownies are a really good example. Brownies were the first kind of fae that I ever started working with because they're very beneficial and benevolent fae that are almost sort of like homemakers. So if anybody's ever read the Dresden Files, the fairies that take care of Dresden's apartment that he can't ever tell anyone about because the second he mentions them, they'll stop coming and cleaning up his apartment. Those were based off of the idea of a brownie, which is a creature that sort of comes out after everyone has gone to sleep and they like tidy up and they take care of the home and then they're gone by the time you wake up in the morning. Something similar to like the cobbler and the elves, mm-hmm. where they come out and they would help the cobbler fix the shoes. But the second, like some stories are like the second he told people about the elves, they stopped helping, or the second he tried to pay them for their work,
they got offended or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like that style of fae that will sometimes find their way into your home. But in general, because you can never be sure of fairies' intentions, just carte blanche, across the board, don't invite them in.
Right, exactly.
If you do want to develop a relationship with the fae, we mentioned they like shiny things, but also milk and honey and candy are very traditional offerings. So if it's something that you're starting to work on, you can bring out like a dish of milk or a little container of honey and like bring it out into your yard and leave it in your yard and be like, this is for any fae that may be around, just, you know, because I felt like it. Have a great day. And then start to sort of build on a relationship that way where you just do things out of the kindness of your heart for them. And maybe they start doing things back for you out of the kindness of their hearts. And you develop, very carefully develop a relationship like that.
And like very specifically too, leaving them as gifts and not as like perceived payment.
Right.
Like you're not leaving it out to expect something back, like brownies to start cleaning your house or something. You're just leaving it out for them. If they feel like doing something kind for you back, that's on them. You're going to leave it whether or not they do.
Right.
Like, yeah. Very important.
Fairies, I know we mentioned it earlier, but like fairies are very honor-bound creatures, right? And they're tricky. So you have to be really careful if you start to work with them about wording your phrasing very specifically. What you say and how you say it, it needs to be very carefully crafted. It's kind of like when you're...
Can I have your name?
No.
You cannot have it, but you may refer to me as...
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So like genies... Genie lore, or like the djinn as they're actually known in folklore, djinn are a type of fairy. And you know how like with djinn and genie lore, you have to be very careful about how you word your wishes because they'll...
Monkey's paw.
Yeah, they'll grant it, but not maybe in the way you were expecting them to. Fairies are very much the same way. You need to be very careful about what you say, how you say it, especially when you actually start asking them for things. Be very, very specific. Be like overly specific. Like, pretend that you're a lawyer writing some kind of ironclad contract.
Pretend that you're a D&D party with access to a singular wish spell.
Yeah. Like, typically when you're writing spells and rituals, like, the flowery wording and poetry and everything gets you in the mood, right? And it helps sort of the energy flow through ritual. Don't do any of that flowery shit when you're dealing with fairies. Because if it's flowery, it is able to be interpreted in different ways, and you don't want that.
Uh-huh. And then one that I've seen, and I can actually see where it's been modernized, is the Hagstone or the Adderstone. So that is usually a river stone. The requirements are basically it has to be a stone and it has to have naturally had a hole created in the center of it.
Yep.
So usually it's like a river stone that had water flow through it until it has a hole or something, but it has to be like an unbroken stone with a hole in it. Mm-hmm. And usually it's used like to hang around your neck. It's a protective amulet. It has been used to ward off the fae or ward off bad luck and things like that. In a more modern sense, a lot of authors will use it as like, if you look through the hole, it reveals the fae or it lets you see through the fae's like illusions or glamours, which is kind of becoming a thing now. There is precedence for it. There is like a singular story. It's the story of the Grail, where the character Peridor is given a magical stone that allows him to see and kill an invisible creature called the Adonk.
Mm-hmm.
That is the only story where a hag stone or a witch stone or an adder stone or something like that is used in that context.
It's interesting. I remember like growing up with the idea that you could look through a hagstone to see something that was hidden. So that is a lot about fairies. And we barely only scratched the surface. Like, I'm not even getting into like how to really incorporate them into a practice, because I treat the fae as a natural force akin to like lightning, where I understand that it is a powerful force of energy that can be harnessed for good or bad within my witchcraft, but I'm not going to like go seek down a lightning storm. You know, like I'm not going to go stand out in the middle of a field with a lightning rod and be like, hit me, lightning. So I'm very careful when I work with the fae. So, but yeah, we really just only sort of scratched the surface of different types of fae and superstition and lore and like what they like and what they don't like. I would be interested to see what our listeners have for favorite fairy resources.
Yeah, because my interest so far, like, I have not incorporated fae into, like, any aspect of my witchcraft. My interest has always been more fantasy fiction folklore driven.
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, I have a 7-year-old witch in my house.
Well, yeah.
And all she wants to do is have a fairy best friend. And I need to, like, on a weekly basis, I need to remind her that we don't invite the fae inside. And she's like, but why, Mama? I'm like, because we can't trust them, baby. It's like, it's just opening up a circle and calling out to like whatever spirit is in the area. Just like, come talk to me. You're like, you don't know what you're calling in. You need to be very careful and specific. And she's 7. She doesn't quite understand that. And plus, she's starting to understand that not all fairies look like the fairies from Tinkerbell, because I'm trying to teach her of all these different types of fae and everything. But like, thanks to Disney, that's what kids think fairies are. So of course she wants a little pixie best friend. And I'm like, no, not in my house. But yeah, if you have fairy superstition or lore, or if you work with fairies, we would love to continue the conversation with you. So you can jump in our Discord server. There will be a link in the show notes to join there, and we can talk about fairies and the different ways to make magic with fairies there, or we can talk about favorite like folklore stories or that kind of stuff. If you want to hear a little bit more about the fae, and specifically like our ramblings that get cut out of the middle of episodes, and you want to support the creation of this show, we would be eternally grateful if you checked out our Patreon page, patreon.com/2bytorchlight. Patrons get early access to episodes. They get, oftentimes they'll get like my research notes for an episode. Like, I'll just wholesale copy paste a document into Patreon and be like, these are the notes that we were going off of. So sometimes we cover everything. Sometimes we don't get to everything. So you get to see some of my background work there.
Or the little love notes that we leave each other sometimes.
Or little, yep, love notes that we leave in our notes, which are always fun. Patrons also get once a month readings, usually tarot, but sometimes I'll whip out like my runes or my my bone set or stuff like that. But we'll send a custom reading to our patrons once a month. So stickers and... If and when we ever have merch, I've been working on designs. I don't know if I like any of them yet, but
we need the peach. You know, we need the Discord peach.
I've got the Discord peach as a reaction icon in Discord. He's our hype mascot. I'm going to print him on stickers, I think, and just be like, hey, if you want one, drop your address, yes, please, because I want everybody to have one of these stickers. I think he's the best. He's our unofficial mascot. But you could support us on Patreon and get access to lots of cool things, and we will be updating that as we get the ability to do more cool things. You can also follow us on social media. We're at 2xTorchlight pretty much everywhere. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. I think that's it for socials. I don't know. What social medias do people use nowadays? I don't know. If it's not TikTok, I don't know.
We have an account everywhere. The question is if we use it.
Yeah. Like, we have a YouTube page. The only thing it has is our visual trailer because, like, we're a podcast. What do we need video for? You can find us online at 2xTorchlight.com. You can email us 2xTorchlight@gmail.com. We love answering questions. So if you have a question on something we talked about in an episode or even something like completely out in left field, we're happy to help or direct you somewhere if we can't help. I think that's it, right?
Yeah.
Discord, Patreon,
come hang
socials,
out.
Website. Come hang out. Come be friends with us. Yeah. And so we will see you back here in 2 weeks for another episode, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm going to go yell about fairies in the Discord now.
Sounds like a good idea.
Okay, bye.
Good night, guys.
Thank you so much for listening and for supporting the creation of this podcast. You can find the show notes for this episode at www.2xTorchlight.com, along with episode archives, contact info, our press kit, and more. We'll see you back here in 2 weeks for another episode.